Thanks a lot, Bruce, for those terrific remarks. Our final panelist of the afternoon is Steve Hayward, an old friend and colleague of mine who got his MA and PhD at the Claremont Graduate School. He is currently a senior fellow of the Pacific Research Institute in San Francisco and the director of their Center for Environmental and Regulatory Reform, in which capacity he co-authors every year the Index of Leading Environmental Indicators, released on Earth Day. Gives you something to look forward to on Earth Day. Find out the Earth is doing okay, actually. He's a frequent contributor to all kinds of journals in which his lucid and often pointed prose can be seen: National Review, Reason, Policy Review, The New York Times, The San Francisco Chronicle, and many others. He is also the author of a very successful business book entitled Churchill on Leadership, Executive Success in the Face of Adversity, which has just been released in paperback version this month, I suppose. This continues a trend of people adapting statesmen and other great figures for executive use. You know, he's threatened, I know, to write a sequel on Stalin as Stalin on Leadership, you know, when you really want to dominate your organization. But he, the cult of personality as, you know, a principle of institutional advancement. But this always reminds me of the joke, which I can never remember whether it was Woody Allen or Alan Bloom who said this. They're actually more similar than you might think. Whoever it was said that, you know, if Immanuel Kant had been an American and had written for an American audience instead of being a German professor writing for a Prussian audience, he wouldn't have written The Fundamental Principles of the Metaphysics of Morals as his chief moral work. He would have written The Categorical Imperative and Six Ways to Make It Work for You. At any rate, Steve is now embarked on an important new book, and I think we ought to keep an eye on this young man, because I think this book will be very important. It's called The Age of Reagan, a chronicle of the closing decades of the American century, and especially in the awful lapse of Edmund Morris's biographical endeavors, I'm sure that this book will do much to redeem and to perpetuate the real legacy of the statesman who was and is Ronald Reagan. It's a great pleasure to introduce my old friend Steve Hayward. Explain my Churchill self-help book, as I call it. It's a long story, but the final moment came when I walked into a bookstore one day and I saw Lincoln on Leadership on the shelf, and picked up this thing and flipped it over and saw that it had sold 100,000 copies, and I sort of scratched my head and said, you know, some nitwit's going to write this book about Churchill. And 2 seconds later I thought, ah, I know who that nitwit should be. Well, anyway, it's an honor but also a problem to follow Bruce, whom I admire so greatly. I always think of him, you mentioned his mellifluous tones, I always think of him as the Vin Scully of conservative politics. I call the reflections I'm going to offer here Notes of a Native Son, in self-conscious imitation of Joan Didion, who wrote a wonderful essay more than 30 years ago called Notes from a Native Daughter. Because like Didion, I'm a native of California, but I've spent a lot of time on the East Coast. I've spent the last 5 years living in Washington, which has given me a whole new perspective on the virtues and vices of the Golden State, and I think a deeper understanding of why Ronald Reagan could never have come from New York or Maryland or Florida, but could only have come from California. Like Didion, I'm drawn constantly back to the state of my birth. I wonder sometimes if some nefarious state agency has figured out a way to install a LoJack system on my soul, but it's probably my chromosomes. My grandfather was an English immigrant who'd lived all over the world, or visited all over the world, by the time he was 30, and he came to Los Angeles in 1916 for a 2-week visit, except he stayed 50 years. I've tried to leave California 3 times now. I guess I'm a slow learner. Next month I'm moving from Washington back to the gold rush country in Northern California. Going back to California, Didion wrote, is not like going back to Vermont or Chicago. Vermont and Chicago are relative constants against which one measures one's own change, end quote. California is different. It really is the embodiment of that stupid Buddhist cliche that the only constant is change. I've often felt living in the East that I really needed diplomatic status. James Q. Wilson years ago observed that Easterners wonder what kind of state could be responsible for Hollywood. Still wonder that. I try to explain California to friends of mine in the East, and especially the contrast between the West and the East and what it can tell us about our political culture. Maybe it's pushing a little too far, but Eastern intellectuals, if they're annoyed or upset about something, found a journal or an organization. California intellectuals, if you think that's not an oxymoron, usually go to the beach instead. If you go about 2 miles down the road here on Figueroa Boulevard to USC, you will find housed there a thing called the Lusk Center for Real Estate and Urban Planning, an eminently practical enterprise, named for a prominent Orange County developer who has since gone broke. Now, Georgetown University, I use the library there a lot, and I drive down Prospect Boulevard past something called the Kennedy Institute of Ethics. The contrast here is obvious. That's named for a family that's bankrupt morally rather than financially, and where clearly the study of oxymorons is high on the curriculum. Or you take the last mayor's election in San Francisco. We're about to do it again here in a few months. 4 years ago, one candidate stripped naked in the shower with two other men on live radio as a way of currying favor with the homosexual vote. And he was the conservative candidate. It's important in San Francisco to curry favor with what I call the homin turn, which is the replacement for the common turn, you might say. The other candidate was Willie Brown, the original Slick Willie. And he won, and now, as we like to say around our office, the Bay Area suffers from a complete brownout, since across the bridge, the artist formerly known as Governor Moonbeam is the mayor. Now there's really no there in Oakland. Sometimes I get to show California to Easterners rather than just explain it. I think it was back around 1987. A fellow I knew from New Hampshire who had never been to California before came out for a week. And he was an old conservative Yankee. He actually worked for Senator Gordon Humphrey, one of the most conservative members of the Senate. And we had a few days to kill, and I said, well, if you really want to see the wacky side of California, come with me. We'll go up to Big Sur, where my family has a house very nearby there. And it happened to be the day of the harmonic convergence. I don't know if any of you remember that, but that was the day in the summer of 1987 when all the planets were coming into a line. And all the New Age religious folks thought this means something will happen. UFOs will come, or the Earth goddess Gaia will, or Gaia, however you pronounce that. What are they for, by the way? Gaia rights, I suppose. Anyway, so we bounced down the hill to the Esalen Institute, which is still there. That's the center of the human potential movement in the 60s, where they charged $3,000 or $4,000 for a weekend of seminars and rolfing. And we go up to the gate and says, hey, so y'all guys doing something for the harmonic convergence? And this fellow looked very serious and says, well, we're having a quiet celebration from a communitarian perspective. And no, we couldn't come in. So I sort of pulled myself up and said, well, what if I just astral project myself inside? And he looked at me quite sternly and says, no, you can't do that. That would be cheating. And my friend from New Hampshire took the rest of the day to get his jaw off the ground and his eyeballs back in his socket. It's a pervasive delusion, Didion wrote, that California is only 5 hours by air from New York. It's much, much farther away than that. National Review, to pick on Ramesh again, has long been fond of saying we will never understand California. And one reason, perhaps, is that they've never thought to ask James Q. Wilson to explain it to them. I guess the way we heard Arnie give a wonderful history, which I had not thought to, because my argument about California is that it's a state that has no past, only a future. And this is what Wilson noticed in a very prescient article he wrote for Commentary in 1967 called A Guide to Reagan Country. About 10 years ago, I asked Wilson how he came to write the article. He's from Long Beach, I think, and was teaching at Harvard at that point. And he said that he proposed to Norman Putharitz after Reagan was elected governor to write an article explaining how it was that California, where Democrats outnumbered Republicans by 1 million voters at that time, could possibly have elected this movie actor by a vote, by a margin of nearly a million votes. And as Wilson recalls, Podhoretz asked him, "You're not going to endorse Reagan, are you?" with some alarm. And Wilson hastened to reassure commentary readers that that was not his intention. I'll quote him. He says, "I left California a long time ago to acquire some expensive Eastern postgraduate degrees and a political outlook that would now make me vote against Reagan if I had the chance. I do not intend here to write an apology for Reagan. Even if I thought like that, which I don't, I would never write it down where my colleagues at Harvard might read it." I'm a huge admirer of Professor Wilson, and I want to sort of pick on him a little bit because those of us who consider ourselves FRB 1980s, that's for Reagan before 1980, once in a while I like to tease these guys a little bit about sort of coming around slowly. The salient point about Wilson's article is that it was chiefly about Southern California. As Mr. Meese told us last night, that election of Reagan shifted the center of gravity from the north to the south. And it's amazing to recall today, Arnie mentioned the housing initiative in 64. The Los Angeles Times endorsed Goldwater in 1964 and endorsed Reagan for governor both times. And today, I don't think Che Guevara could get the endorsement of the LA Times. What Wilson noticed was that the political character of Southern California was wholly unlike the settled political patterns of really the rest of the country, and that what you saw in California with the election of Reagan would soon come to dominate throughout the Sun Belt. Now, everyone thought Kevin Phillips thought of this first after the 1968 election, but in fact, Wilson was there first. Again, to quote Wilson, "If I had to cite only one way in which Southwestern politics differ from Northeastern politics, it would be this. The former region," meaning the Southwest here, "the former region is developmental, future-oriented, and growth-conscious. The latter is conserving, as distinct from conservative, past or present-oriented, and security-conscious. A conserver needs more government in order to protect present stakes from change, from threats posed by other groups, and from competition." I think, by the way, that this gets to the heart of the matter about the current national controversy over urban sprawl. When I first heard, you know, a year and a half ago, I started picking up all the headlines in the national press about urban sprawl, being a Californian, I just thought, well, been there, done that. You know, we've seen this one before. But what you're seeing is that having now, a majority of the population having now moved to suburbs throughout the country, they now wish to see the exercise of more government power to preserve the character of their neighborhoods and communities. I think that's driving the politics of that issue. So with this background, two queries. Is Southern California still the political center of gravity in the state? And does Southern California still have that same future-oriented political character that Professor Wilson espied in 1967? And I'm always kind of loath to make predictions about this. You know, Sam Goldwyn, the great movie producer, used to say, never prophesy, especially about the future. Now, I think we'd have to say that it's possible the political center of gravity might be shifting back to the Bay Area, never mind the two U.S. senators about whom the less said the better. More significant, in my mind, is the rise of Silicon Valley, or what I call the California province of Nerdistan. It's clearly the commercial and entrepreneurial center of the state now. And the problem here, and I won't go on about this except to say that the Valley is politically immature, showing both hopeful signs and some deeply problematic signs. And I think Mr. Campbell said at lunch today that we ought to read the Forbes ASAP, and there's lots of other literature you can read to get a window into the political character of Silicon Valley. But that's going to be very important in California. The more pressing question is Southern California. I think, with due caveats for changing circumstances, the answer is Southern California is still, to a large extent, the future-oriented in the way that Professor Wilson observed. And there are a lot of reasons you could do. I'll just develop a couple and then sit down. As has been alluded to today, that Republicans, to frame the matter in partisan terms for a moment, are pretty dispirited for having been clobbered in the last election. But as has been observed, Republicans got clobbered in the 8 years before Ronald Reagan, too. What Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. We'll see. In ideological terms, the great worry that we've also heard today is that surging numbers of minorities in California, culminating in a few years from now, a Latino majority in the state, is perhaps foreclosing a conservative future here. or at least foreclosing a Republican future. That last part might be true, although I think that's more the Republicans' fault. I'll give you a couple of pieces of data and a couple of anecdotes. Hispanic males have the highest labor force participation rate of any ethnic group in California. As Bob Ernst mentioned this morning, they're a very entrepreneurial group. And I think that fact tells in the fullness of time in various hopeful ways. Opinion surveys show that Hispanic attitudes towards O.J. Simpson, for instance, are almost identical to the attitudes of whites. A lot of people back east who have been asking me, why hasn't Governor Davis been jumping on the smart growth bandwagon, the way Maryland's Governor Glenn Denning has, or even Republican Governor Ridge in Pennsylvania? And one reason is that Hispanic leaders in California, business leaders, are telling Governor Davis that to them, smart growth stands for send Mexicans across the river tomorrow. And so he's moving very cautiously on that while everyone else is running pell-mell. I can tell some stories about this, and I'll skip over them in the interest of time. There have been a number of interesting fault lines opening in the state legislature between Hispanic Democrats and some of the older ideologically liberal Democrats in ways that are, I think, significant and that the press is studiously avoiding reporting on. But the point is, it doesn't require a lot of imagination, in my mind, to see why demography need not be destiny in California. I think the state may march off in a direction disconnected from the rest of the country for a while, or may not be the trend-setting state it used to be. This is what Michael Barone has been arguing the last year or two. But I don't think we need to suppose that there are no prospects for a conservative future in California. And I agree with Bruce, by the way, about the Gen X phenomenon, which is worth talking about. I'll close with a gloss on another one of Didion's typically lyrical passages. She wrote, California is a place in which a boom mentality and a sense of Chekhovian loss meet in uneasy suspension, in which the mind is troubled by some buried but ineradicable suspicion that things had better work here, because here, beneath that immense bleached sky, is where we run out of continent. And I've always liked that passage, but I've also always thought that it was way too overwrought and could only have been written by a California transplant who spent too much time in the morose offices of the New York Review of Books. I mean, Chekhovian loss in California in the same sentence? Most people in California, you say Chekhov, they think it's a Star Trek character, right? And by the way, sort of the last chance place. In America now, the last chance place you go if you can't make it anywhere else is Las Vegas. That can be a fun story for some other time. Things had better work out here, she says. Well, I know what Ronald Reagan would say. He'd say, of course it's going to work out here. Why would we think anything else? Thanks.